KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo Nation officials this week addressed ongoing concerns about the recent restart of uranium ore hauling through the reservation. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports it follows months of negotiations with the owners of a mine near the Grand Canyon.
In an online video, acting Navajo Attorney General Heather Claw said the tribe was unable to prevent the transport despite opposition from many residents, lawmakers, and Navajo President Boo Nigrin. The tribe doesn't have jurisdiction over the haul route, which is made up of state and federal highways.
So the next best thing that we needed to go ahead and do is to make sure that we protected our Navajo Nation people. So that's why we took the approach of negotiating terms in order to make sure that this agreement provides those protections.
Navajo officials can now inspect the truckloads before they enter the reservation, and the shipments are limited to certain hours and days. The agreement also includes emergency response procedures and several other provisions. Stephen Etzidy, executive director of the tribe's Environmental Protection Agency, pointed out that the mine is fully permitted with state and federal agencies.
We took that and trying to develop as many mechanisms as we can to push the limits of regulation and oversight on this transport activity for the benefit of our communities, and that's where we remain focused.
Earlier this month, 25-ton trucks of uranium ore left the Pinyon Plain mine near the south rim of the Grand Canyon, bound for a mill in southern Utah. The shipments passed through several northern Arizona communities and a large swath of the Navajo Nation. The tribe expects 10 trucks per day for the next 2 to 4 years. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
A young boy from White Mountain, Alaska, leaped into action recently when flames enveloped his family's home. And as KNOM's Ben Townsend tells us, the second grader likely saved his great-grandmother's life.
Roseanne Titus was getting ready for the day on Thursday morning when she saw flames coming from a bathroom at the front of the house. Her granddaughter and great-grandson were still in bed. Titus tried unsuccessfully to put out the fire and then rushed to wake up her family. But the flames had spread into the hallway, blocking the way out of the house. That's when her great-grandson, 8-year-old Colton Kanuka Cauchy, sprang into action.
He kind of jumped out the window and ran for help.
That's Colton's mother, Vanessa Marie Kanuka. She said her son plunged 10 feet from the window to a snowdrift below. He ran through deep snow to get help, which came in the form of Shane Bergamashi, a volunteer firefighter. Bergamashi helped pull Titus through a window and rushed her to the local clinic to await a medevac.
They helped us right away when we got in with my grandma's burns and smoke inhalation. I only had a popped knee and a few frostbites on my toes.
Titus was flown to Anchorage, where she was treated for burns on her shoulder and arm. The home was a loss, including personal belongings and 2 moose legs from a recent hunt. Despite the heartbreak of losing the family home, Colton's grandmother, Nora Brown, who was not in the home at the time, credited her grandson with keeping the situation from getting much worse.
We would have probably lost my mother, and the houses nearby probably would have caught fire also.
Bering Air is ferrying donations to the family, and a GoFundMe has been set up. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
The National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. is displaying 2 gowns worn by Oscar-nominated actor Lily Gladstone. The installation opens Friday ahead of Sunday's Oscars. Both gowns were a custom collaboration designed by Gucci and indigenous artist Joe Big Mountain, featuring native design and quill work. 4 public programs are planned in March. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
So we're trying to not save all this up and publish it in a report that says, oh, this is bad. We're trying to solve some problems.
Senator Lisa Murkowski looks for solutions for lost federal funding and fired workers. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 28th. Good evening. I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, state lawmakers are concerned about the impact of federal cuts in Alaska.
Even if half of what's been proposed happens in Alaska, it is going to reverberate around the state in a way that we haven't seen in many, many years.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
State legislators are imploring Alaska's all-Republican delegation in Congress to work across the aisle to halt the wholesale firing of federal workers, spending cuts, and possible reductions in Medicaid coverage. But just identifying the extent of the federal impact is difficult. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports that lawmakers in Juneau and Washington, D.C. are resorting to unusual means.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski chairs the Indian Affairs Committee. The panel turned to Facebook this week to gather information. The committee said in a post that it wants to hear how federal workforce changes and executive orders are affecting Native communities. If your community is affected, the post says, please share your experiences and concerns by contacting us at oversight@indian.senate.gov. Senators usually have better methods of finding out what the government is up to. Murkowski says gathering information is just one of the goals.
Some of it, quite honestly, is we're listening to it and trying to see, all right, is this one that we can resolve right now with just a phone call? So we're trying to not save all this up and publish it in a report that says, oh, this is bad. We're trying to solve some problems.
Murkowski says President Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, recently told Republican senators she doesn't know the extent of the problem unless someone alerts her. Wiles invited Republican senators to call her when they can't get specific funding unlocked, which Murkowski says is helpful.
And then you find that somebody's looked at it and boom, the money's released. So you hate to have to say that it's a project by project, case by case, but sometimes that happens.
As for the Trump administration's termination of federal workers in Alaska, Murkowski says her staffers are trying to compile a list, but some agencies like the Park Service are hard to track.
I don't think we know the real numbers there.
Is the Forest Service in the hundreds, in the dozens?
I think for us in Alaska, it's in the dozens. I don't even want to hazard a guess, but it's over 50.
Murkowski says her staff are getting information from Alaskans and trying to piece together information to, as she put it, get some fidelity to the numbers. But it's a moving target. Waves of terminations come almost daily, and then some are rescinded. A federal judge in San Francisco said Thursday the Trump administration's firing of thousands of probationary employees is illegal. But the case is far from over. That Senator Murkowski can't get the data on federal job elimination shows how haphazard the government actions have been. In addition to chairing Indian Affairs, Murkowski chairs the subcommittee that writes the spending bills for the Park Service, the Forest Service, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and related agencies. Meanwhile, in Juneau, State Representative Elise Galvin of Anchorage has launched her own effort to learn the extent of Alaska's federal job losses. She's asking Alaskans who were fired from their federal job to fill out a Google form. Here she is reading from three responses she's received so far.
Currently, my family is in upheaval. We do not know if my income will continue from day to day. My job was the culmination of decades of hard work, first to get a PhD, and then to do years of postdoctoral training. My wife is also a Fed and may get sacked after 20 years of service. My children are incredibly anxious. I found a place to rent in Palmer for this position, spent 2 months working and moving in, thousands of dollars to relocate, and was terminated on week 8.
Galvin says she plans to pass all the stories on to Murkowski, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan, and Congressman Nick Begich.
We hope that it will better inform them and give them what they need, the fire under them, to stand up on the floor and talk about the person from Wasilla and the person from and what they've done, what they used to do, how concerned they are for the losses to Alaska.
So it goes in the early weeks of the second Trump administration. In the absence of hard data and a systematic approach, the hope is that a powerful anecdote can ward off federal havoc. With reporting help from Eric Stone in Juneau, I'm Liz Ruskin in Washington.
Leaders in the Alaska House and Senate say they're deeply concerned about the impacts of federal staff cuts and a forthcoming congressional immigration and tax cuts bill. Senate President Gary Stevens and House Speaker Bryce Edgman say the two Trump administration priorities, quote, endanger the economic prosperity and social well-being of Alaskans. That's according to a letter the two top leaders sent to the state's congressional delegation on Thursday. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has the details.
Edgman says the two leaders are concerned a recent House-passed Republican budget framework will leave Congress no choice but to slash programs like Medicaid, SNAP, Head Start, and bypass mail.
Just to contemplate the impact, even if half of what's been proposed happens to Alaska, it is going to reverberate around the state in a way that we haven't seen in many, many years.
Medicaid is a particular concern for state lawmakers. The budget resolution from the U.S. House charges the committee overseeing Medicaid and Medicare to cut $880 billion from its budget over 10 years. Edgman and Stevens say the plan could lead to the loss of more than $2 billion in federal funding, and that's at a time when the state is already facing hundreds of millions of dollars in structural deficits amid faltering oil revenue. Stevens and Edgman also decry the Trump administration's moves to fire more than 1,000 newly hired or recently promoted federal workers, from fisheries researchers to forest rangers. Data on exactly which jobs have been lost has been spotty, though union leaders say they expect all of the nearly 1,400 so-called probation.
I'm going to break in here just for a second. At 6:30, we have a game. Then we have another one at 8 o'clock. So basketball here for you this evening. Stay tuned.
Especially concerned the firings will make Alaska less safe. She points to agencies like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and its subsidiary, the National Weather Service.
It's horrifying. For the safety of our fishermen, as we all know, that's one of the most dangerous endeavors or professions that there is. And to reduce the safety factor even more is just unconscionable.
Some Republican state lawmakers, though, say leaders are overreacting. Senator Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican serving as the Senate Minority Leader, points to statements from congressional leaders promising to avoid sweeping cuts. He says for now it's all speculation. After all, at this point, Congress hasn't laid out the specifics.
First of all, the process is just starting. They have no idea. And anybody that says anything about what's going to happen or how it's going to take place or what's going to be cut is pure speculation at this point.
As for the federal firings, Schauer says he supports Trump and billionaire Elon Musk's efforts to shrink the footprint of the federal government. But he says he's optimistic that even if the cuts go too far at first, critical jobs will be filled.
So this is maybe the process of ripping the Band-Aid off a little bit, and it's painful. But we may have to look at rebalancing when it's over, right? So it's going to be really a painful dip here as they kind of basically go through the sledgehammer. And then maybe it's time to come back in with a scalpel after that and start, okay, now what do we really need?
But to Stutz, that rings hollow. She says she's worried it'll exacerbate the state's struggle to keep young people and families from finding greener pastures elsewhere.
Well, that's great to say as these cars are headed down the highway. You know, we're talking about the out-migration. This is a perfect example of what's going to happen. You think it was bad before?
She says she's worried that even if the jobs come back, the people who filled them won't. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a hands-on career fair aimed at students on the Kenai Peninsula.
Our goal is to get them involved in the actual learning and have them experience what we're trying to teach them rather than just telling them about it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A woman fatally shot Monday at an Anchorage park had come here from Hawaii for a fresh start, her sister says. Anchorage police say 33-year-old Kikita Lou Fatu was the victim in Monday's shooting at Davis Park in Mountain View. They had no further details on the case available today, and no arrests have been made. Samantha Fatu, Kikita's sister, says she came from a large family.
She had like 12 brothers and two sisters, and she was the baby.
When Kikita got into trouble in Hawaii, Samantha brought her to Anchorage. The sisters lived together for a while before Kikita started to spend more time away.
She was doing great until she got into some friends she knew from back home. So she was on the streets.
Samantha says Kikita was in a friend's motorhome at the park Monday night when a bullet fired from outside entered it and struck her. Police say medics took her to a hospital where she died soon afterward. Samantha says the news has been shocking to Kikita's family, especially given her outlook on life.
She did everything that she wanted to do, and she did it with a smile.
Police are asking anyone with information on the shooting to call them at 311. The Alaska State Legislature is looking at a bill that would fund free breakfast and lunch for all public school students. Juneau Student Nutrition Service employees say it would keep students fed and take the financial burden off districts across the state. But KTOO's Jamie Deep reports that lawmakers want more information about the cost.
$28.7 million. That's how much the State Department of Education and Early Development, or DEED, estimates free school meals for Alaska public school students will cost. It's the price tag on a bill from Fairbanks Democrat Representative Maxine Dybert. Despite the costs, supporters like the Food Research and Action Center's Clarissa Hayes told lawmakers about the benefits of providing meals for all students.
We know that hungry children do not have the concentration and energy they need to thrive at school. Studies have shown participation in school meals improves students' attendance, behavior, and academic achievement, and also reduces absenteeism and tardiness.
House Education Committee members grilled DEED's staff about the exact cost of carrying out the program and found there's a good deal of information missing. For starters, they said the cost estimate doesn't include the cost to carry out the program for schools that don't already participate in federal school meal programs. They told the committee about 9 districts aren't currently in the programs. Glen Allen Republican Representative Rebecca Schwanke says she wants to see what other programs are already in place that could help bring costs down for the state.
I would definitely like to have a follow-up consideration, really, of all the possible ways that we can really bolster the good things that are happening across the districts, especially when it comes to getting food to the children that really need it, and not creating a free program that's too broad, that puts the onus on the state to provide food that's not necessarily needed.
In a later interview, Juneau Nutrition Service Supervisor Elizabeth Seitz said this would be a game changer for families that struggle financially but don't qualify for free and reduced lunch. Her district's offered universal free breakfast for close to 10 years, but it's currently not included in next year's proposed budget, so some students will have to start paying for meals. Seitz says the issue is twofold. Some families don't qualify for free and reduced lunch but struggle to pay for meals. Federal reimbursements also aren't enough to cover the full cost of meals for the Juneau School District. She says the program would feed a lot of these students.
If this bill were to go through, it would be a significant relief for districts and students across the state.
Seitz says nearly 80 families in the district had their free and reduced lunch applications denied so far this school year. LaVanne Truitt is an administrative assistant for the Juneau School District's nutrition program and fills in at the schools that need food service workers. She told KTOO some of these families just don't meet the requirements set by the federal government.
We unfortunately have to turn down a lot of people who apply. It's not up to us, but they don't hit the income limit, and it's so close.
The price of lunch means it also costs the district more than a dollar for every lunch it serves to students paying full price. Truitt says many students rack up negative balances with schools to get lunch. She says there's about $12,000 in school meal debt for the district this year, and it's costing the district money.
I know several schools have paid off debts out of donations, but at this point right now, the school district is feeding kids regardless of whether or not they can pay.
The committee held the bill so that lawmakers could get more information. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
High school students in Bethel say Alaska Native heritage is integral to their accelerated science and engineering education and are protesting the University of Alaska's recent decision to rename the NSET program. KYUK's Samantha Watson caught the teens during a school walkout this morning.
Watson's Corner in Bethel is the city's closest thing to a town square, which means the three-way intersection is the place to be heard. A cluster of ANSEP students are fired up, cheering and chanting, gaining honks of support from passersby. The teens have painted cardboard signs, some standing tall on a February snow berm.
Our sign says, "Our education, our rights."
My sign says, "Our way of life is being inclusive."
Don't erase, don't replace, keep Alaska Native in its place.
Mine says it's not just a name.
The Bethel students in what was formerly called the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP, are protesting the removal of Alaska Native from the program's name. Painted signs aside, they are an organized bunch.
We wrote this all out.
Isabella January is 17 and a senior at ANSEP. She's one of the walkout's organizers. January adjusts her cardboard sign so she can read what she's prepared from her phone.
This program was initially created to bring more Alaska Native people to STEM career fields. By taking away the mentioning of Alaska Native, it is potentially erasing the history of this program.
The name change for the Accelerated High School Program was one of a series made by the University of Alaska Regents to remove the terms diversity, equity, and inclusion, or any similar words, from its website and programs. The language change was made to comply with an executive order from the Trump administration aimed at erasing DEI initiatives. But as January puts it, those very principles are central to the program's founding. ANSEP was created in 1995 to foster Alaska Native talent and interest in the science and engineering fields. Previously, with minimal access and areas off the road system, there were few opportunities for someone from a rural community to develop the skills to become an engineer there. Now, the name change feels like a blow to the very people it was created to support.
I am Yubika Nupia, and just seeing like the Alaska Native name just being removed, it was kind of shocking at first.
January says Bethel students and faculty were stunned by the name change, but they quickly began thinking about what they could do.
And then Ellie, she's the one that created the petition.
Ellie Lavalle is 16 and a junior in the ANSEP program. She helped organize a petition on change.org that aims to show the Trump administration, quote, the importance of our program and prevent the potential erasing of our program's history. It has over 300 signatures already.
We didn't think it would blow up as much as it did. We posted it on all of our Instagram stories and our Facebook stories, and we were hoping that a lot of people would sign it. And then a lot of people, we didn't know like how other people felt about it yet. That was just like us. And then it turns out like everybody else is just as fired up as we were.
She holds a sign which says, in painted yellow letters, if we bend now, when do we snap?
Because like if we had to take out the mentioning of Alaska Native on the website, then like what else are we going to have to take out? Because there's so many like there's like Alaska Native arts and things like that like embedded in our program. Like, are we going to have to change a lot of those things too?
The Bethel organizers say they coordinated with students at ANSEP's other branches in Matsu, Kotzebue, and Anchorage, who also walked out on Friday. They hope the message gets across that the program's history, rooted in Indigenous education, is integral to its future. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race starts tomorrow at 10 a.m. with a parade-like ceremony through Anchorage. The 33 mushers and dozens of dogs will snake from downtown at 4th Avenue and D Street to the Sullivan Arena. The route is only about a mile and a half, not the usual 11 miles, because there's not enough snow. Dismal snowfall has also pushed the official start of the race north from Willow to Fairbanks. After tomorrow's ceremony, the teams will drive to Fairbanks and officially start their Iditarod on Monday. Mark Nordman, race director, says there's a lot of snow on the revised trail to Nome.
Lots of good snow up there. Travel is safe. Definite strong reports that people are traveling with no concern about open water or anything that we can't get around. I think it's going to be a real exciting race, demanding in a different way.
This year's trail is over 1,100 miles, longer than all prior Iditarod routes. Based on the Iditarod's last run out of Fairbanks, plus an extra over 100 miles, we can expect this year's champion on Wednesday, March 12th. Meanwhile, for the second Sunday in a row, a group of Ukrainians will make a stand in Midtown Anchorage for their country. Last week, about two dozen Ukrainians stood at the corner of Seward Highway and Northern Lights to mark the third anniversary of the Russian invasion. They held poster-sized photographs of the destruction caused by the war. This Sunday afternoon at 3, they will again return to the same spot. Tatiana Kovac is one of the organizers. She says the Ukrainian fight for freedom should hit close to home for people who live in a state that was once part of Russia.
Alaskans have to be aware of this, and they also have to unite with Ukraine because we are all neighbors. Those imperialistic desires never faded.
Ray Craig is a longtime Alaskan who saw the Ukrainians on the street standing alone and decided to join them. He says Ukrainians have lost tens of thousands of people in the war and wants to honor them for their sacrifice.
We're a frontline state with Russia, but anybody in the West needs to care about this because the battle lines for freedom in the world are in eastern Ukraine right now.
Craig is a Republican and says he doesn't support President Trump's policies. He says Sunday's rally is an opportunity to learn more about Ukraine and what's at stake. More than 100 students participated in a hands-on career fair event in Nanilchik on the Kenai Peninsula earlier this month. The event was organized by the peninsula's Economic Development District and aimed to connect students at small rural schools to postgraduate opportunities. KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara has this story.
It's just after 11 a.m. when a classroom in Nanilchik erupts with the sound of about two dozen students tearing into plastic packages of sheep eyes.
I don't know what it felt like.
After some minutes of laborious cutting with surgical scissors, pairs of students successfully extract what looks like a fleshy gray golf ball. They're quick to describe the smell and search for the gelatinous material inside.
Oh yeah, there it is.
You find the goo? Can I see the goo?
Oh, it's gooey.
Yeah.
At the front of the room, Spencer Toft hunches over his own sheep eye, trimming it with scissors and guiding the group.
Everybody see that little nub on the back? So that's your optic nerve.
Wow.
That's what translates all of that stimuli that's coming into your eye, goes through that optic nerve to your brain.
Toft is the education coordinator for the University of Alaska Anchorage's Area Health Education Scholars Program. He's just one industry professional who converged on the K-12 school in Nanilchik for a hands-on career day event called the Student to Career Launchpad. It was organized by the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District, or KPED, and it was the first time more than 110 6th through 12th grade students from 9 of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District's small schools gathered for the event. Cassidy Cameron is KPED's executive director. She says her team has been planning the event since last October with the goal of bringing resources to students who might not otherwise get them.
Part of the core of this program and this concept is to reach out to our rural small community schools and the students that are there that don't typically have capacity or resources or the opportunity to go to the large career fairs up in Anchorage or in Kenai.
Cameron says bringing the students hands-on opportunities was important.
We didn't want to have a row of 20 booths for people to just go around and get a pen or a piece of paper and talk to somebody. We wanted people to be engaged and kind of having an opportunity to be hands-on and have an experience.
Cameron says the maritime workshop was the most popular. Students practiced tying nautical knots and did team-building exercises. Next door, in the renewable energy workshop, students wielded thermal imaging cameras. Colleen Fisk is the education coordinator for the Renewable Energy Alaska project.
Since we're thinking about electricity, where does most of our electricity come from here on the Kenai Peninsula?
Mostly AGA.
So Homer Electric Association is the organization that provides it for us. That's great. And then it's natural gas.
Back in the sheep eye dissection workshop, Toft had similar thoughts about how to engage students.
They spend a lot of time typically being talked at, right? And so our goal is to get them involved in the actual learning and have them experience what we're trying to teach them rather than just telling them about it.
Toft's workshop is geared towards students interested in healthcare.
Sheep eyes are actually very similar to human eyes in overall form and function. And it was just it's a fun activity to get the students involved, see what maybe if they're interested in human anatomy or see if that stuff grosses them out.
Nanilchik 10th grader Judea Mobley was one student who participated in the sheep eye dissection workshop. He says he signed up because he's interested in pursuing a career in healthcare after he graduates, maybe as an emergency medical technician or a surgeon. He says the activity...
Bill Palmer, that's our Bristol Bay Angels. They are coached by Troy Hammond. Now let's take a look at our home team for tonight, the Pinto T-Jacks. Jersey Mac, number 12. Number 13, Sailor Gould. Number 31, Elliot Farr. And our starters for tonight, Captain, number 1, Logan Iapana. Number 4, Captain Michael Gould. Number 15, another Captain Brennan Larson. And number 34, the big man, Robert Thompson. King Cove T-Jacks are coached by Ricky De La Cruz. And that's it for our player introductions here in Port Allsworth. Teams are going to talk it over just a little bit briefly and then take the court. So some pretty insane games thus far. Bristol Bay winning earlier today against Tenalian to get this spot in the semifinal game for the second place tournament. King Cove also with a pretty decisive victory over New Haven earlier today. So winner will advance to the next round of the loser's bracket tournament. Loser of this game will be eliminated from the regionals tournament and not have a chance to contend for a spot at the 1A state championship game. Both teams on the court right now. Looks like 15. Brennan Larson tipping off for King Cove. Number 10, Aitu Lilo for Bristol Bay. And we are ready to start here. Ball is in the air, and the tip is off. Recovered by King Cove. They're going to start with possession here. Number 4, Michael Gould bringing it up. He's looking for Larson in the corner. No good. Going the other way, that's going to be an angel ball. So 0-0. King Cove not able to score on that first possession. Bristol Bay bringing it down the court. Number 15, Riley Aurelio with the ball. Looking for an open man. He's got somebody in the corner. That's Julian Trifon. Trifon trying to get it back to Aurelio, but it's going to go over the half-court line, and officials are going to call that an over and back. So turnover there for the Angels. King Cove taking the possession now. Brennan Larson inbounding for King Cove. He's got number four, Gould, who's going to get that inbound. Passing it to the left. Riley Wilson, number three, passing it to Gould. Gould has it on the left side of the court. Gould driving to the right, looking back at Wilson. Wilson drives in, kicks it out to Gould. Gould driving in. Dish to the big man, Thompson. And he is going to get fouled on the way up. Thompson looking to get a low post bucket there, fouled, and he's going to go to the line for two. So Thompson with a chance to get the first points on the board of this game. Thompson has been a pretty critical part of this King Cove offense, getting rebounds, being that big man down low, able to get buckets for the T-Jacks. First free throw is up, no good. So Thompson 0 for 1 on those free throws, has a chance to get another one here with his second shot. And Thompson's second free throw is good. Angels taking the ball out of bounds. They're going to bring it up to court. Bristol Bay Angels dribbling it up to court. Aurelio with the ball. He's going to pass to number 10, Lilo. And that's going to be a three-point attempt from Caden Torino. Bristol Bay no good. Recovered by the T-Jacks. Stolen by number 15, Aurelio. And went for the layup. No good. Rebounded by Bristol Bay. They're going to go for another shot attempt, but Brennan Larson's going to come down with that rebound. So King Cove with the possession. Score is only 1-0. Riley Wilson, three-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by no one. Ball is going to go out of bounds, so it's going to be a Bristol Bay ball. So only 1 point scored in this game. A free throw from Robert Thompson. King Cove has a one-point lead. Score is 1-0. 6 minutes and 37 seconds left in the first quarter. Angels with the ball, passing to the left, going back right. Cross-court pass to Julian Trepon. He's going to pass to Aitu Lilo and get Bristol Bay's first point of the night. A nice three-pointer from Lilo. King Cove with the ball. Gould looking inside, driving in. No good. Rebounded by Bristol Bay. Julian Trepon for the Angels, bringing it the other way. Passing to the short corner. Trepon a little give and go play there by Julian Trepon, who's going to get a nice layup from the middle of the paint there. King Cove ball coming the other way. King Cove with only 1 point thus far, scores 1-5. Bristol Bay with a 4-point lead. Gould, number four, driving inside. He's going to dump to Thompson, and it's good. That was Robert Thompson, big man number 34, with 2 more points. He's the only player to score for King Cove tonight. Bristol Bay, another cross-court pass there, and it's stolen by Riley Wilson, who's going to dump it off to Michael Gould. Gould bringing the ball up for King Cove. Gould dribbling to the right side, heading right, looking for Brennan Larson. He's got Larson. Larson's going to pass to Wilson. Wilson back to Gould. Gould driving inside, dumping it to Larson. Larson, little jump shot there, no good. Rebounded by big man Thompson. He's going to lose it. Ball's on the ground. And that's going to be a jump ball. So possession is Bristol Bay Angels ball. They're going to bring it the other way. Score is 3-5. Bristol Bay leading this one. So number 15, Riley Aurelia bringing the ball up for Bristol Bay. He's going to pass right. Going to get passed back up top to Lilo. Aurelia back with the ball now. Aurelia back to Lilo. Pass to Caden Torino, and a nice bucket there from Julian Trepon. That was Aurelia who got that backdoor cut to Julian Trepon for a Bristol Bay Angel layup. Michael Gould looking for the jump shot, no good. Going to be rebounded by Bristol Bay. Bristol Bay bringing it the other way, Aurelia with the ball. Aurelia looking, he's got Torino to the left. Torino back to Aurelia up top. Aurelia driving to the right. Aurelia picked up his dribble, looking for some help. He's got Torino. Torino passes it to the right. Lilo with the ball, and he's going to pull a three. No good. Rebounded by Aurelia, though. Bristol Bay keeps possession here. Caden Torino at the top. He's going to pass to Julian Trepon, number 14 for Bristol Bay. Trepon back to Aurelia, and he's going to pull up for a little jump shot there. No good. Rebounded by Brennan Larson. So Larson with the ball. bringing it up the middle of the court for the T-Jack. Score is 3-7. Bristol Bay with a 4-point lead. Big man Thompson tried to get something going down low, but missed that shot. Rebounded by Bristol Bay. They're coming the other way. Bristol Bay has the ball. Number 10, Lilo, with the ball at the top of the perimeter. Back to Aurelia. He's going to shoot a three. No good. Going for his own rebound. Him and Thompson fighting over the ball. Going to be a jump ball. So King Cove with possession on that jump ball. They're going to take it the other way. Aurelia trying to guard Gould here, full court. Gould dumps it to Thompson. Thompson back out to Wilson. Wilson to Larson. Larson to Gould. Gould, quick three-pointer. He's got it. Michael Gould, number 4 for King Cove, with his first points of the night. Three-pointer from the left side of the court. Score is now 6-7. It's a 1-point game here in Port Allsworth. Bristol Bay bringing it up the right side. Pass to the corner. And Bristol Bay trying to get something going. There was a shot attempt there by number 24, Will Palmer, but it was no good. Went out of bounds. Tipped out of bounds by King Cove, though. So it's going to be a Bristol Bay ball under the basket. Aurelia inbounding for Bristol Bay. He's going to pass it into Julian Trifon, who's going to pass it to Lilo. Three-point attempt from Lilo. No good. Rebounded by Thompson. So King Cove with the ball now, taking it down the court. Brennan Larson dribbling the ball off the court. He's going to pass the high post. It's going to get passed back out to Wilson, back to Larson. Larson dribbling to the left, dumps it inside, but there's going to be a foul on Larson there. So looks like a blocking foul on Bristol Bay. So King Cove's going to remain possession here. They're going to take it out under the hoop. Brennan Larson inbounding for the T-Jacks. He's going to pass out to Gould, who's wide open. Three-point attempt is no good. Rebounded by Bristol Bay. Bristol Bay coming the other way. So Bristol Bay passing it around the top of the perimeter, trying to get something going here. Number 10, Lilo, driving in, and he's going to be called for a travel. So turnover there from the Angels. King Cove ball. Score is 6-7. Bristol Bay with a 1-point lead. Brendan Larson dribbling their ball around the perimeter. He's going to pass to Wilson. Passes to Gould. Gould's going to pass to the right. Dumps it inside. Back out to Wilson. Riley Wilson, number 3 for King Cove with a 3-pointer there. And they're going to take the lead. 9-7. King Cove now leading this game. Bristol Bay has the ball. Passing it around the perimeter. Aurelia inside from atop of the key jump shot. He's going to get his own rebound and try and put it back up. No good. Rebound by Brennan Larson. He's passing it out to Gould on the outlet pass. Gould whipping it across the court to Wilson. Back to Gould. Now to Larson. Inside to number 1, Iapana. Went for the shot. No good. Larson with the rebound. And Larson with the putback layup there. Score is 11-7. King Cove now with the lead. Bristol Bay has possession, bringing the ball up the court. Ball is in the corner now. A little give and go to Aurelia there, who's going to dump it out to number 4, Boyce Anderson for Bristol Bay with 2 points there. King Cove has the ball. Score is 11-9, a 2-point lead by King Cove. And Riley Wilson for King Cove with another 3-pointer. Score is 14-9. King Cove leading. Bristol Bay with the ball. They're going to look to Julian Trifon at the low post. Back out to Caden Torino. 3-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by Brennan Larson. Larson bringing the ball off the court for King Cove. Larson looks left to Gould. A deep 3-pointer from Gould. No good. Rebounded by Bristol Bay. Aurelia with the ball, dribbling up the court. They've got a fast break going here. He dumps it to Julian Trifon. It's got two. Fast break layup from Julian Trifon. 14-11. King Cove winning this. 9 seconds remain in this quarter. King Cove passing it around, trying to get this last second shot. Wilson, short corner jump shot. And he's going to get it right before the buzzer. So Riley Wilson with the last points of the quarter. Score is 16-11. King Cove winning this one. Top scorer tonight for Bristol Bay, Julian Trifon with 6 points. On the King Cove side, Riley Wilson with 8 points, a pair of threes, and then that last minute short corner buzzer beater to get C-Jacks a nicer lead here going into the second. So 5 point difference in the game here. Bristol Bay leading most of the first quarter, but King Cove able to turn it around and get a nice lead heading into the second quarter. So far, this has been a pretty even matchup. I think we've seen good things defensively on both sides, but also offensively. Both teams looking for some good three-point shots, working the ball, getting open passes. So far, it's been a pretty good game. Earlier today, King Cove faced off against the New Haven Malamutes. The first half of that game was pretty evenly matched, but King Cove took off, won by a very large margin of victory there in the second half to make it to this game going on right now. Bristol Bay with possession. They're going to pass it back in. We are back from the break, and a three-point attempt there from Bristol Bay. No good. That was Lilo with the attempt. King Cove has a fast break opportunity, but it's going to get passed out of bounds by Michael Gould. He was trying to get it to his man, number one, Iapana, but the pass was a little high. So Bristol Bay with the ball, bringing it back down the court. Riley Aurelia, point guard for Bristol Bay, bringing the ball up. He's going to pass to the left to Reno. Torino fires. It's good. 3 points for Bristol Bay. Caden Torino with that nice three-pointer. Score is 16-14. Two-point game here in Port Allsworth. King Cove has possession. They're going to pass it inside. Pass it back out to Larson. He's dribbling inside. Trying to get something going. Riley Wilson has it on the perimeter. Gould now on the right side. He's going to pull up. It's good. Contested three-pointer by Michael Gould. Score is 19-14. Bristol Bay with the ball. Passing it to the corner. Passing it back around the perimeter. Three-point attempt there by Lilo is good. It's you, Lilo, with the three-pointer for Bristol Bay. 19-17. Two-point game. King Cove leading this one. Michael Gould driving inside for King Cove. Fadeaway jump shot. No good. Gould trying to get a fadeaway jump shot from the short corner, but he's not going to get it. Bristol Bay has the rebound, bringing it the other way. Bristol Bay passing around the perimeter, looking for an open shot. Julian Trifon with the ball. He's going to pass to Aurelia on the left side. Over to Torino. Back to Lilo. Lilo! Back-to-back three-pointers for Aitu Lilo. And that's going to give the Angels a lead here in the second quarter. Score is 19-20. King Cove with the ball, trying to regain the lead here. Larson drives inside. He's going to dump to Sailor Gould. He's going to kick it out to Wilson. Wilson's got it. His third three-pointer of the night. Riley Wilson. King Cove is back on top of this game. 22-20. King Cove leading. Bristol Bay swinging the ball to the left. Torino dribbling the ball on the right. He's going to pass to Lilo. Went for the three. No good. Tipped out of bounds by King Cove, though. So Bristol Bay ball. Lilo trying for back-to-back-to-back threes. He's not going to get it. Passed into Lilo, though. Lilo with the ball on the key. Trying to find an open man. It's going to go back out to Torino. Torino dribbling to the left. Now to the right. He's going to pass to Aurelia at the top of the perimeter. Back to Torino on the left side. Torino to Lilo. Back to Torino. Torino at the top of the perimeter. He's going to pass to Trifon. Trifon to Aurelia in the corner. Three-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by King Cove. Score is 22-20. King Cove in the lead on this one. Michael Gould driving to the right side. Deep fadeaway jumper by Michael Gould. No good. They're going to get their own rebound. And Michael Gould tried to put it up, but missed that shot. Bristol Bay gets the rebound, bringing it the other way. Aurelia, pass out to Lilo. No good. Lilo tried the three, but couldn't get it. Aurelia is going to get the rebound, try to get the putback bucket. No good. It's going to go off the hands of some Bristol Bay players out of bounds. King Cove ball going the other way. So Michael Gould taking the ball off the court for King Cove. Scores 22-20. King Cove still on top of this game. Larson has the ball in the middle. He's going to pass the number one, Iapana. He's going to try for a little elbow jump shot there, but it's no good. Bristol Bay gets the rebound and is bringing it the other way. Torino with the ball on the left side. dumped to Aurelia, back to Torino. Torino, three-point attempt. No good. Did not make contact with the rim there, and it's going to go out of bounds. So Pinto ball coming the other way. Number three, Riley Wilson with it on the left side. He's going to pass to Larson. Larson driving inside. Contested layup there is no good. So Bristol Bay is going to get that rebound and take it the other way. 22 to 24 minutes remain in the first quarter. Bristol Bay hoping to get a lead here. They've got a wide open man down low, Will Palmer. He's not able to get that bucket. King Pope is going to get the rebound and bring it the other way. Number one, Iapana, back out to Larson to Gould. Gould driving inside. Can't get the finish. Rebounded by Saylor Gould. And a bad pass by Gould there is going to result in a turnover. So Bristol Bay ball. Saylor Gould checking out. And number 34, Robert Thompson coming in for him. Bristol Bay ball coming the other way. Score is still 22 to 20. We haven't seen some points in a few minutes here. So we'll see if either of these teams can get something going. Bristol Bay trying to get the ball to the corner, but it's going to be deflected out of bounds by the T-Jacks there. Bristol Bay ball out of bounds. Pass inbound to Julian Trifon going around the perimeter. Angels swinging it around the perimeter. Back out to Julian Trifon. He's going to pass to the low post, but it's deflected out of bounds by Riley Wilson of King Cove. So Bristol Bay ball under the basket here. Aurelia taking the ball out for Bristol Bay. Lilo outside. He's going to put up the three. No good. Rebounded by Larson for King Cove. So no points on that possession. Score is still 22 to 20. King Cove on top. Thompson at the high post. No good. He went for a little jump shot there, but it's going to be rebounded by number 14 for Bristol Bay. And he's going to turn it over. Julian Trifon with the turnover. Riley Wilson recovers. King Cove has the ball. 22 to 20. 3 minutes left in the second quarter here. Wilson with the ball, dumps it to Gould. Gould with a three-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by number zero, Caden Torino. And looks like Brennan Larson of King Cove is going to be called for a reach-in foul there. So Bristol Bay will have the ball out of bounds. They're bringing it up the court now. Number 15, Riley Aurelia, bringing the ball for Bristol Bay. He's going to pass to the right, passing it to the corner. Swinging around the perimeter. Aurelia in the left corner. And loses the ball there, recovered by Larson. So number 15, Larson for King Cove, bringing it the other way. Larson's looking at Riley Wilson. Wilson has it dribbling to the left to Gould. Gould dribbling to the right. Number four, Gould dribbling inside. Dumps it to the big man Thompson. Kind of a bad pass there, so he's going to lose the ball. Recovered by Bristol Bay. Julian Trifon of Bristol Bay. Trying to get some fast break points. Misses the layup, though. It's going to be a King Cove ball right there. Brennan Larson of King Cove bringing the ball up the court. Score is still 22 to 20. We have not seen many points scored in this second quarter. It's been a few minutes since our last score. And number 15, Brennan Larson, trying to get a little fadeaway key shot there, but he's going to be fouled on the way up. So Brennan Larson heading to the line for two shots here. Score is still 22 to 20. Larson hoping to extend the T-Jacks lead with these free throws. First one is no good, but he's got another one on the way here. Larson with only 2 points tonight. We'll see if he can get another one right here. Larson's second free throw is good. So, looks like officials are calling for a blood check. One of the players, we're not sure who, must be bleeding right now, making sure there's no blood on the court or on jerseys. Looks like we're good. So, a little official timeout right there, but we are back in the game. No blood on the court. So, score is 23 to 20 after that Brennan Larson free throw. Bristol Bay Angels now with the ball, passing it around the perimeter. 15, Aurelio has it outside. Aurelio launches the three, and it's good. A little bank three there from Aurelio to tie this game up, 23 to 23. 1 minute and 40 seconds remain. King Cove has the ball. Gould looking for a jump shot, can't get it. Rebounded by Bristol Bay. Bristol Bay bringing it the other way. Lilo dribbling the ball on the right side of the court. He's going to pass to Aurelia. Aurelia passing it around. A little give and go there by Aurelia. He's passing it back outside. Back to Lilo. Lilo shoots a three. No good. Rebounded by Larson for King Cove. Larson passes it to Gould. Gould bringing it up the middle of the court. Passes it inside. Larson with the ball on the outside. Passes it to Wilson at the top of the perimeter. Back to Larson. Larson dribbling to the right. Looking inside, Larson dumps it to the big man, Thompson. He got it. Thompson, a nice feed from Larson there to get 2 points. Scores 25-23. We have 45 seconds left in this second quarter. King Cove with a two-point lead. Bristol Bay with a chance to take the lead. A three-pointer from Aurelia is no good. Rebounded by King Cove. Michael Gould with the ball, dribbling up the middle of the court. He's going to dump to Wilson. Wilson dumps it to Larson. Larson looking inside. A nice finish from Brendan Larson there. 27-23. King Cove leading this game. Bristol Bay trying to get the last shot. Number zero, Caden Torino shoots a three. No good. Rebounded by King Cove. King Cove bringing it the other way. They got a fast break opportunity here. Michael Gould. No good on the fast break. But number one, Logan Iapana got that rebound, went up for the putback, but is fouled on that shot. So he's going to go to the line for two. So number one, Logan Iapana shooting two free throws here for the T-Jacks. So far, Iapana with no points tonight. First free throw is no good. He's got another one here, though. Scores 27-23. King Cove with a 4-point lead. Now a 5-point lead. Iapana's free throw is good. 28-23. 1 second left. Aurelia chucked up a half-court shot there. Hit the back of the rim, but no good. So we're going to go into the break. King Cove having a 5-point lead. A defensive battle tonight. Very low-scoring second quarter, though. Right now, we have about 10 minutes until the start of the third quarter. Both teams are taking a break, resting on their benches, going over some strategy.
Yeah, you heard it, 28-23, King Cove's ahead. And we're right at the halftime. Now, stay tuned. At 8 o'clock, we have another game. I think Sam Point's playing. It should be the championship game or really close anyway. So we'll see what happens on that. Great basketball this tournament we're having. It really is. Let's hear a little bit of music while we're waiting. A little Bratmobile doing Die. Let's go back a couple decades from the 90s. Great music from the 90s, but there's some really good stuff coming out of this decade, too.